A sudden change at the top at Jaxport. Shahid Khan unveils his proposal for the shipyards, and 500 CSX employees get their pink slips. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen anytime. And tune in right now to the audio feed of this program on our Facebook page. Just ahead, all of the news of the week with our Rockin' Friday Media Roundtable. Join the conversation right now at 549-2937. Then later, Project SOS celebrates their legacy of helping teens across the First Coast. Plus, don't miss our talk with Broadway legend Audra McDonald as she performs on stage with the Jacksonville Children's Chorus. And we'll have a live report from the Concours d'Elegance up on Amelia Island. All of that ahead, but first, it's Friday. Time for our weekly media roundtable as we welcome Sebastian Kitchen, reporter for the Florida Times Union. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal.
Good to be here.
Claire Goforth, who edits Folio Weekly.
Good morning.
And blogger Fred Matthews.
Good morning, Melissa.
So good to have all four of you with us. Lots to discuss this Friday. Everything from the state of the Jaguars franchise to Shahid Khan's vision for the downtown shipyards now has been officially unveiled, and more to go over. But our top story of the week, a big shakeup at Jaxport. CEO Brian Taylor resigned Wednesday as the Port Authority nears construction on one of the largest projects in its history. This is the second unexpected departure of the port's CEO in just a few years. What does it mean for the port and for Jacksonville? Give us a call, 549-2937 to join us. That's 549-2937. Send an email to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweet at Melissa and Jax or weigh in on our Facebook page. Let's begin with business editor Tim Gibbons. There was an official reason given as to why Taylor fell out with the board. They did vote 6-1 to approve his separation. How much do you think this has to do with the stalled efforts by the port to find funding to dredge the St. John's River to accommodate bigger cargo ships?
I don't think there's one particular thing you can point out, but there is there was a general sense with the board of dissatisfaction with how Taylor was leading the organization. It goes back a couple years. This obviously came to a head this week, but it's something that there's been talk about for at least a year, maybe more. Obviously, the non-movement on the deepening, which people have said, well, a decade is the most important thing that has to happen in Jacksonville, is not a good thing. It's actually unclear, though, how much of that is Taylor's fault when you have other steps that still have to be taken that aren't necessarily things he can do.
Right. Sebastian Kitchen, politicians have signed off on dredging the river, but there's really no available pot of money for it that anyone's been able to isolate.
There's small pots that the port included some money this year. There's some money in the state's five-year transportation plan. So Jaxport included $46 million for dredging this year. Brian Taylor said earlier this year, in early February, that they hope to start construction this year. So they appear to be getting closer. They have the deal that they need with the Army Corps of Engineers, but they're far from the almost $700 million that they need. And one thing that I do think is interesting about the situation is everyone you talk to will tell you you need local funding before you can tell the feds we would like money from you. And the port has yet to make an official ask. So they want to begin construction on a $700 million project this year, but they have yet to ask the local government for exactly what they need. So at the meeting where they departed with Mr. Taylor, John Falconetti, a board member, did say he thought they were getting very close to coming up with a package to fund the dredging.
It's 549-2937. So Fred Matthews, Claire Goforth, dredging the river has been controversial from the start. Where does this leave the port? And by the way, this is the second departure of a CEO at the port in less than 5 years.
Yeah, the optics of that are not good. But as far as the dredging is concerned, while there are politicians who are saying it's going to be good for Jacksonville and we need to do it, and the port's been saying that for a long time, that's the only line that they're giving us, the reality is that the Army Corps of Engineers did not conduct a multi-port analysis when they looked at this, because they didn't actually believe Jacksonville was going to be successful at taking taking cargo share away from Savannah, Charleston, and Miami. It's worth noting that Savannah and Charleston have recently, the governors there have announced that they are going to invest $7 billion of their state money to increase their capacity once they reach their limit in order to continue to capture more of that market. Savannah right now, I believe, is working at about 42% of the Eastern Seaboard cargo market. And Jacksonville is what I think it's around, I think, 11%, and we just really haven't been very successful at capturing more of this market. And the deep water, it's the siren song of deep water is what I call it, but the reality is that it probably is not going to work out well for us. We'd spend close to $1 billion, maybe more in the end, and then we're going to be left with the same port that we have now.
Tim.
The time frame becomes just such a challenge there, because Savannah jumped out ahead of Jacksonville, you know, years ago, got that first mover
advantage.
And
that's the only port, really, for the whole state of Georgia. Florida has
a lot of 14 ports, so there's obviously that. But you also have the idea that Savannah captured so much of that market. Jacksonville theoretically could have gotten some of it back if we had deeper water, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. But by the time Jacksonville has deeper water, so will Savannah. And Savannah is committing to really expand to deal with that.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe we've had very many headlines recently as the legislature goes into session about providing any money for this, for Jacksonville. It's not been among the current Mayor Lenny Curry's five favorite things to fund, especially when he's looking at holding the line and not adding any new taxes, even though he supports the idea of this dredging deeper. It is not in the top five things either in the legislature for us or certainly in the city council or on the mayor's agenda. So the port may be putting together a package, but they have no one to hand it off to that's going to be able to do anything with it.
It definitely is a port funding has been a priority of Rick Scott, mm-hmm. and the port has benefited to some extent from that. But
he's agreed to front some money to do this project. But How much, though?
But he hadn't got a drop in the bucket.
But he hadn't gotten it through the legislature, and right now he's at odds with the legislature on 10 other things.
Yeah.
The list came out of President Trump's infrastructure priorities. There's been talk of the administration really wanting to spend a lot of money on that. Jacksport deepening was not on it. The Democrats' list of infrastructure projects did include it, which is great when you control neither a House of Congress or you know, the presidency to have that list. It's nice to be on it, but what it means, you know.
And Sebastian, the TU as well has done a lot of reporting on what this project means, not just for the port, but for the entire First Coast's economy, its infrastructure too. There would need to be major improvements to infrastructure around the port to bring this off if so much more cargo is going to be moving through our local port.
Right, if there's going to be a lot more cargo.
If it happens, the
Asian trade, container trade, which is what this is geared to bringing in, has been increasing. But it hasn't been increasing here as much as, you know, some other places. And looking at, and they've made some improvements out there. They have a rail transfer facility and some other places. So they've been working on some of the improvements that they need, but there would obviously need to be more to be able to handle that. But if you look at a chart that shows the last 20 years and the trajectory of Jacksport and the trajectory of Savannah, they were very close a couple decades ago, and Savannah is just skyrocketing, and they've pulled away, and it's not close. So if you think that part of this business that Jacksport is going to get is going to include not just bringing in new container business, but also taking that away from some of the other ports, there's been no evidence that would work.
All right. And if you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable, always one of the most popular shows that we do here every morning at 9 as we discuss the top stories of the week. What are your thoughts about the week's biggest headlines? It's 549-2937 to join us. And right now, we want your thoughts and comments about Jaguars owner Shad Khan. This week, he unveiled his ambitious plan to transform the downtown waterfront shipyards parcel. Now, Khan envisions this massive development that would stretch south of Bay Street and west from Everbank Field all the way to the unfinished Berkman Plaza building. You've probably driven by that. It's been undone for years. What he wants to do, according to the renderings, is everything from an exhibition space, a hotel and spa, residences, mixed-use entertainment area, a veterans park, three marinas, a kids zone, and even a berth for the museum ship, the USS Adams. Local advocates of taking the Navy destroyer and banking it on the North Bank and turning it into a museum are trying to work with Shad Khan on that. So what do you think about this shipyard's plan? 549-2937. Claire, go for it. This is one of several plans that have been submitted to the city for consideration.
Yes, and if the past performance is a predictor of future, then we're probably going to see Conn's iguana investments get the contract, because the legislature has signed off on that $250,000, is that correct, to study removing the heart ramps, which is something that he very much wants. But I would like to see when they do the RFP and they actually consider these plans, really consider the more ambitious plans, that 1,000-foot sea glass tower, observation tower. Jacksonville, it doesn't really have any man-made landmark that really stands out from a visitor's perspective. It's just, hotels and plazas and the beach, which is nice, and people love living here. I think that other cities do have really these notable landmarks. People talk about the High Line in New York, and, there's just so many things around the country, and we're sort of lacking that in this city.
Yeah, Fred, this other group, Presidium Group, wants to build this 1,000-foot-tall observation tower right there in the middle of the shipyard's property to bring in more tourists.
I think it'd be neat. I really do. I think it'd be neat. It's like, we don't need to do a Ferris wheel, a giant Ferris wheel like what they have in London, but I think it'd be really neat. And a combination of the ideas would be nice, with that being one of them, but I simply don't think it's going to happen, obviously, with Mr. Conn having sort of the inside track.
No, it's a free and fair competition. The Presidium idea is interesting. It's partnering with a local Ponte Vedra-based developer called Kelleshe Investments, who actually floated this idea a couple years ago. I think the big question is going to be, once they release details on these projects, of how much city money is actually being asked for. The Presidium idea would buy the land for $20 million and have the city commit to spending $15 million to clean it up. I'm sure Shad Khan is not asking for city money because, he has enough.
Yeah, one thing we know.
They would never ask for city
exactly.
money.
Oh, that
seems unlikely. So.
One thing we know is going to be there. The USS Adams is going to be there somewhere, because I think the ship is already on its way here.
It's actually in dry dock now, I think.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
They're bringing it down the East Coast, and they want to dock it right on the North Bank in Sebastian. What about Shad Khan talking about the Jaguars State of the Franchise event? When he talked about the hopes for the team, he said, as goes downtown Jacksonville, so goes the Jacksonville Jaguars. We are one.
Well, considering the Jaguars have the worst record in the last decade, I hope that does not speak for the future of downtown Jacksonville. Although they're they're on the same trajectory about now.
But what about his idea that if we can beef up all this development around the stadium and get excitement going there, that goes hand in hand with driving excitement about the NFL franchise?
I do think it would go hand in hand. I think it would be, if it works out well, and once he puts his mind to something, he's been very successful. So if he decides to move forward with this and moves on, I think it can be a very successful venture. And there's already some small growth in this area, which is close to where we're at now. With Intuition, it does very well. It's kind of on an island, but people still come of an evening on Friday nights, and they like to gather there. So there's some growth here anyway. So if you take that with the Daly's Place and the changes that he's proposing, I think it could drastically change downtown Jacksonville.
And they've got Tom Coughlin. They signed some free agents yesterday.
It's going to be interesting, because I think there is I don't actually get the same sense of optimism there was last year. Last year people were, okay, this is it. This is going to be our year. And those hopes were dashed. And I think people, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I was trying to remember how Bush said it, but the idea that one of the things during the State of the Franchise thing that I found interesting from a business perspective was how profitable the London games are, how much of that helps the franchise. The Jaguars need more local revenue, and really all of this is trying to say, how can we make this a more successful business? And at some point, it has to be away from just the field to doing other things. I think it says something good about the team's commitment to Jacksonville that they would want to do this sort of project.
Let's go to your calls quickly as we continue this discussion with our Friday roundtable. What do you think? 549-2937. Peter at the Beaches. Hi, Peter. Good morning.
Yes, hi. I live in Jacksonville, out at the beach. I'm not interested in any monuments or tall buildings. I am interested, though, in something that would bring me downtown, which is, for instance, a decent-sized outdoor concert venue where the Jacksonville Symphony could hold concerts every summer, just like Blossom Music Festival in Cleveland. Just a few weeks ago, we were talking about getting people to go to downtown. So the obvious question is, what will Shad Khan's development project do to accomplish that goal?
Okay. Yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see the tourists take the Riverwalk down to the abandoned courthouse. Look at our picturesque jail.
St. Augustine has haunted building tours. I mean,
that's an excellent idea.
Fred.
Well, I mean, that is the other part of this puzzle. Now, you know, it's ironic that here we are 50 years, 60 years later, and of course, the riverfront property can't be used, shouldn't be used for government buildings. How dare you? But of course, that's what we did 60 years ago. We built all the government on the river, and everybody came down there to be put in jail, be prosecuted, and file your paperwork. So now that's the way. But imagine this now. We're going to have this huge, new, sprawling, whatever it is going to be right there on the shipyard. Across the street, you're going to smell coffee every day, and then you're going to have if you get imprisoned, you're going to have a great view from the jailhouse.
It's a very short trip if you get booked.
Of all of the activity.
The jail, yeah.
So you get in jail, you get on at least the fourth or fifth floor, you got a great view of all the people roaming the streets.
The club level at the jail.
Wow. We can update Folsom Prison Blues, you know?
549-293-7. Kevin at the beaches. Hey, Kevin, do you have that Friday feeling?
I do. Thanks, Melissa. You know, it's funny, the two topics I think go hand in hand. Perhaps Brian Taylor left Jacksport because he realized that Shad Khan has some vision and imagination for the city, and Jacksport certainly does not. That is, if the city is going to spend hundreds of millions of dollars, then they ought to be doing it on downtown, something that will really bring jobs and growth and vitality to the city, as opposed to the port deepening, which has no guarantee whatsoever of bringing in any commerce or any additional jobs. It has a certainty of creating adverse environmental impact to the river due to increased salinity and whatnot, and no evidence whatsoever that it would actually benefit the city economically.
Kevin, thanks. That's certainly the argument that's been made by those opposed.
Although what's interesting is that idea of invest in downtown because that will bring things. I'm sure you have plenty of listeners who also disagree with that, who would see investing in downtown as a boondoggle as well. So, you know, I think many city leaders would disagree with that. Many city leaders do think that investing in downtown is important, but that's been a fight in Jacksonville for decades as well, of why put money in downtown? We're a big sprawling city, you know.
But now that you've got Khan, who clearly every power player in Jacksonville, they want to be aligned with him. He clearly is going to put his money where his mouth is on downtown.
Well, the other part about this is that a lot of people are looking at, and we can't miss this, is that this is an investment. It is a business deal. The Jaguars are going to do what Jaguars are going to do. It's a football team. The players are going to play. Folks who are interested in that are going to buy the season tickets. They're going to be there. They're loyalists. They're going to do what they need to do. But we must not lose sight of this as an investment deal with a lot of hard dollars involved. The city is going to have to invest taxpayers' money into this thing. Whoever eventually approves this, who's going to approve this? Vision, Inc.?
Downtown Vision, Inc., the
okay.
City Council.
They've got to approve it. They're all going to own this.
Oh, excuse me, Downtown Investment Authority.
Yeah. They're all going to own this investment deal when it goes. And so, you know, a lot of eyes are going to be on who is going to own this thing. And if we're going to basically give this over, if it's going to be Mr. Khan, it could very well be one of the other groups, but we're going to very well give this over to him. We're giving away half of downtown to a private investor that if this doesn't work, folks, you know, who's going to own it?
Larry is downtown. Hey, Larry, how are you today? How's downtown looking for
morning.
You? Good morning.
Well, I've been downtown a long time, been in business since 69. But I think that Mr. Khan's project is a wonderful project, and I'm sure it will be very successful for what they do down over there. But if you're talking about bringing downtown back, it's what comes first, the chicken or the egg. And I think that first, you have to have the people downtown before you can have people want to live downtown. And the way you get people downtown is you're going to have to probably cough up some money to get large companies to come downtown. People must realize that downtown Jacksonville from the mid-'80s is down 29,000 people. Well, you know, if you're down that many people, it's hard to sell condos. And the only way you can get people downtown in this day and time is you have to give them some incentive, just like they did with everybody. And I think that we should have every city, state, and federal office that we can come downtown and open up businesses downtown that will bring people downtown. If the universities could have some kind of a program downtown where people would come. But you have to, I think the people has to come first, and the other things will come next. But I think Mr. Kahn's project is wonderful. I think it's great. But as far as bringing the core area downtown back, I think it's the other way around.
Thanks, Larry. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, Larry makes a very salient point on the population shift to the south side. I'd like to hear what city council folks who represent these outlying districts think of just moving all of the businesses down to the downtown area. But, I mean, Shad Khan, he's a brilliant businessman. Obviously, you don't become a billionaire as an immigrant because you're bad at business. But is he great as a football owner? In the years that he's been the owner of the Jaguars, their record has been dismal. At some point, we're going to have to start asking ourselves if we have a Washington Redskins situation on our hands, where we have a brilliant businessman owning the team, not so great at managing it. And of course, he wants downtown to do well. It's going to increase his profit margin. That's where he is coming from in this.
Sebastian?
I think he'll continue to try to make the efforts that he can to make the team better. When you see how he's done in other ventures, they've done well. So his soccer team right now, not great. His football team, not great. But they've been willing to spend the last couple of years. The results haven't been great, but he brought in Tom Coughlin. And so we'll see what the results are. Tim talked about the fool me once thing. I will not be renewing my season tickets this year, but I will be gladly watching it. And I hope that they do well, because I do think it bodes well for the city if they do well.
Here's a tweet from Robert. Look at Riverside. It was dead before Publix and thriving after Publix, meaning that shopping center with the anchor store.
That's that idea of, you know, needing people downtown, where that is the conundrum of doing development. You need people to attract retail, to attract people, but which comes first? And in some ways, I think a project like this, the idea is, you go to Daly's Place for concerts, you go there for football games, you shop at the places in the shipyards, and at some point you go, hey, how about I just move down here? I'm spending time here. That attracts more retail, and eventually you have rebirth.
David on the south side. Go ahead, David.
Yes, I'm looking at that as, are we going to have a mix of local and national businesses there? National businesses sweep profits every night. Local businesses reinvest back in the city and other ventures. There, if we're supporting this, and we are, as our tax money, and we put over, I bet, in the past couple of 5 years, $100 million into the Jaguars, I'd like to see some of the money recycled locally. All these national chains, big box, just drain money out of the city, and it doesn't get the velocity of money. You don't get it passing hand to hand. It's just plain gone. So we need to make sure there's some local benefits to local economy besides just minimum wage jobs.
Thanks, David. Thanks for the call.
It doesn't look, in the plan now, it doesn't appear there are any of these big box national resorts. It appears that the thrust is entertainment. So hotels, marinas, parks, to get people to come down. And a lot of them, with the talk of it being a Four Seasons or a nice hotel, would be for people who are visiting Jacksonville. And then hopefully there will be some events, some venue that'll attract people who live here also. So I think a lot of that is on people visiting Jacksonville.
Here are a few comments on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. JP writes, I like the plan from the Presidium Group better. It has a convention center. Marcel, I love this idea. Add an aquarium to it. Anything to revitalize downtown is a good idea. There is a group trying to bring an aquarium downtown as well.
That aquarium has been a dream of a group of people for years. And there was talk, I want to say the original Iguana Investments shipyard plan a couple years ago did have an aquarium. you know, I'm sure that they're, as this project moves ahead, just like the Adams basically went from being somebody's dream to now, it's just, you have to incorporate that into anything that you're doing with the shipyards. I'm sure the aquarium, you know, aficionados will do the same sort of thing.
Okay. Also this week, CSX finished its layoffs as railroad magnate Hunter Harrison, now the CEO of the company, moves forward with his moves to take things over and shake up the railroader. The final number of pink slips, 800 employees total have lost their jobs, including 500 here in Jacksonville. What does this mean? By the way, these are all 500 employees that worked and spent their money downtown, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, CSX was one of those places that, you know, you had a job there, you're going to be safe. There's nothing. You can go there till you retire as long as you, you know, keep your head down, do the work. And again, the question of the day still seems to be, what was wrong? what was wrong with CSX? Why did this have to happen? Is it simply greed? I want to have it. One guy with a whole lot of money, and he's just decided I want to have this, and nobody's going to stop me until I get it. What was wrong with CSX that this had to happen? And is this one of the reasons why we don't trust businesses to run government things? Because businesses run for profit with people secondarily. What was wrong?
Well, it is for profit, but I mean, you know, a lot of people have CSX stock in their portfolio. What was wrong is that we're not using coal anymore, and their business just, you know, got hammered once the mainstay of what they shipped, they weren't carrying it anymore. So their revenue dropped, they tried to cut back, and now you have somebody who says they can make them even more efficient. And efficiency is basically saying doing the same amount of work with less people and fewer people.
And this CEO has been, there's a reason he was brought in. He's been brought into other railways. He's transformed how they did business, streamlined how they did business. And so when an investor looked at this and thought he could basically do the same thing, they did a takeover. They're coming in, they're putting people on the board. They're going to bring in this gentleman that already have, Hunter Harrison, going to pay him an extraordinarily high amount of money, $300 million, I think is the total.
That's what the company said when they were fighting with him. It's a $2.2 million salary and like guaranteed $2.8 million for his first year, and then the issue of making
stock options
and bunch of stock options.
But what's a few million here or there?
if he can actually do it, though. I mean, CSX stock went up, what, $15? It was like 20%. I mean, it was, shareholders clearly think that they'll still make out on this, even paying them that much.
Yeah, I mean, this is a larger philosophical question in business. It seems that businesses, there is no such thing as enough profit. It always has to be more profit and more and more and more, no matter what kind of cuts you have to make. And these kind of cuts, we're taking 500 people in Jacksonville who used to make a good living, and now they're looking for work in a job market where they're going to have a hard time finding equal pay what they were making at CSX. At some point, we have to actually examine the way we're looking at consumerism and profit margins and how important it is to have a sustainable economy as opposed to an economy that has these huge peaks and valleys. And
but good luck with that. That's a trend, and I don't see that reversing anytime soon. So these billionaires who are willing to spend that kind of money to bring somebody in, I don't think that's anything that they're going to look at anytime in the
near
future.
Maybe not, but as we see, the distribution of wealth going more and more into the tiny 1% of the population while the rest of us in the middle class is declining. I mean, these are questions we really need to ask ourselves as a nation.
So if coal didn't work, then are they going to go more head in head with the trucking business? Because obviously we're seeing more trailers being hauled on the trains than we are seeing trucks on the road.
What's the new model?
They started a couple years ago moving to intermodal traffic, which is basically taking stuff that had been shipped by truck. You ship it by truck for the beginning and end of the trip and put it on trains for the rest of it, which was a fairly innovative push for the company to do because, you know, again, a big chunk of their business vanished. So they tried to make it up with intermodal, which they've done, but not to the level, obviously, that people think Harrison can come in and do.
All right. And finally, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from around the state. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. And this might just be the best only in Florida of all time. Only in Florida do a lying lawyer's pants literally catch on fire while he's in court. It seemed like a setup to a tired joke. A lawyer's pants caught fire. But on Wednesday, it was Stephen Gutierrez's reality when the Florida defense attorney's pants started smoking during an arson trial, of all things. The 28-year-old Gutierrez was in the Miami-Dade County courtroom defending his client, who was accused of setting his car on fire, when the lawyer started playing with an item in his pocket. As Gutierrez argued that his client's car had merely spontaneously combusted, the lawyer's pants seemed to start doing the same. Witnesses in the courtroom say the moment was surreal as Gutierrez rushed out of the judge's chambers while smoke billowed from his pocket. He returned unharmed to the courtroom moments later and said a faulty e-cigarette battery was to blame. Reports of these batteries exploding are being documented across the country.
I hope that we actually find out that it was his client. Like, actually somehow lit his pants on fire. Like, he just couldn't help himself.
I was wondering if it was just Jim Carrey and doing a
liar, liar
cover for the Liar Liar sequel.
And only in Florida do drunk guys get hauled off to jail because they were caught chasing roosters in Key West with their golf carts. Yes. You've been to Key West, right, everybody? You know how things go down there. 34-year-old Daniel Jones was visiting the Conch Republic from New Jersey when he had a few too many drinks and then took a golf cart, driving it erratically through the streets while intentionally swerving in the direction of a rooster. The rooster hopped onto the sidewalk and avoided injury, say witnesses. Jones fell asleep in the patrol car on the way to jail and is now charged with DUI and other minor charges.
Are you saying he was playing chicken?
he was
playing rooster.
Why across the road?
Get away from drunk guy on a golf cart.
Thank you, Fred Matthews, Tim Gibbons, Claire Goforth, and Sebastian Kitchen. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa.
Much more to come. We'll be right back.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
As lawmakers return to Tallahassee, Florida public radio stations will bring you the most important news from this year's legislative session. WJCT is teaming up with our partners across the state for in-depth coverage of education, healthcare, and environmental legislation on air and online. We'll have stories during Morning Edition and longer discussions on Facebook Live every day at noon. Decision Florida coverage all next week on 89.9 WJCT.
Calling all artists, WJCT is celebrating 45 years on the radio. And we need your help to design the perfect anniversary t-shirt. Design should reflect what WJCT means to you or the First Coast community. The winning design will be featured on a limited edition t-shirt during our spring pledge drive. Get started now at wjct.org/45 years.
Hi, this is Chris Thiele inviting you to tune in this weekend for a Prairie Home Companion from Philadelphia. Our lineup of guests includes the world-renowned singer Angelique Kidjo, Mr. Jason Isbell, the Dover Quartet, and one of our very favorite poets, Billy Collins. Plus a bit of comedy from the Royal Academy of Radio Actors, my song of the week, and a whole lot more from the City of Brotherly Love. Hope you'll join us.
Saturday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. They say they're committed to strengthening families by empowering parents and kids to make healthy life choices. Next week, Project SOS is celebrating more than 20 years on the First Coast. Pam Malarkey Robbins is founder and CEO and joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, more about your event in a moment, but first, let's talk about Project SOS.
Okay. We started, 24 years ago. When a beautiful ninth grade girl, straight A student, never had a date, got pregnant. And it was the entire football team from one of the best schools in the state of Florida that were coming over one at a time in the afternoons when her wonderful parents with master's degrees from Ivy League schools were taking care of their business. They were fantastic, supportive parents. So it wasn't the family problem. It was the culture problem. It wasn't the school problem. It was the culture problem. And when I found out she had gotten pregnant, I got sick to my stomach, literally. I was on the school board in St. Johns County getting ready to run for state legislature, and I thought, no, I can't do that. I've got to help teenagers. I didn't enjoy being a teenager, so I thought, you know what, maybe I can help others. And so that's what we've been doing for 24 years. We've impacted the lives of over 460,000 teenagers.
And what you do is you talk about everything from dealing with bullying, making healthy choices, avoiding risky behaviors like drug and alcohol abuse, mm-hmm. and other things.
Yeah,
right?
Basically we teach them, first of all, we identify what they're good at, what are their talents and their gifts, and then how do we put those into SMART goals, which are specific, measurable, accountable, realistic, and time-based. Then they write those in their workbook, which is 91 pages of great stuff, and they put that on their refrigerator so that their whole family knows where they want to head. From there, we talk about how valuable they are, each and every teenager, and then how do we protect those goals? Because if they don't have the skills, critical life skills, it's really, really tough out there. It was tough for me when I went to college, but nowadays it's really tough with all the social media. So we teach them 6 boundaries that they establish. We teach them 6 refusal skills on how to get out of bad situations that they don't even know how they got into, probably. And we teach them what it looks like when they're being manipulated. Most kids don't know that. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you did. Mm-hmm. But manipulation is tricks that people play, and we identify those. Then we go into the bullying. How does it feel for you to be called names? And then how do we treat others like we want to be treated ourselves?
Yeah.
Suicide, violence, crime, drugs, alcohol, cutting, sexual, risk behavior, just everything you can think of that they're dealing with. We try to bring them hope, and we do that best. My young adults are in the classroom are just phenomenal. They love each and every student, and they bring hope to these kids.
What would you say to those that have criticized your position on LGBT youth? Here's a tweet from Jimmy. Has Project SOS repudiated its history of anti-gay bias? It's a dangerous program for LGBT kids, or was?
Well, I think that's a bold-faced lie, to be honest with you, because we don't discriminate against any children. We love every child. We have had gay, lesbian, whatever in our classroom. We don't ask them what their sexual orientation is. It doesn't matter. They all need refusal skills, boundaries, goal setting, and they need to be able to make healthy life choices. So I'm sorry he thinks that about us, but we're not that way.
Okay. And moving forward then, you are, in fact, having a big event to celebrate 23 years on the
24?
First... 24? 24 yep. years, yep. rather. What's going to be happening?
Well, I go to so many fundraisers. I probably do 4 to 8 a month, and some of them are really boring. And 10 years ago, we said, you know what? Let's do something that's really fun. So we bring in a clean comedian. His name is John Chris. He's from California, and he's our entertainment for the night. We also have a silent auction that's done on the cell phone. If anybody hasn't done that, it's kind of exciting. They can call our office and get the link to go on the silent auction. We have probably over 300 companies that have donated to us. They're just so supportive, and they want to help our teenagers. And then we have a live auction, which is really exciting. We have a 114-foot yacht that's been donated for a night, and a TPC chef that will do a dinner party for 6, and just really unusual things that are fun.
This is coming up next Saturday at Sawgrass Marriott, and it's Aloha, a Hawaiian theme.
Yes, on the 18th.
Yeah. Yep. For Project SOS, go to their website for more. She is Pam Malarkey Robbins, founder and CEO. Aloha. And,
Thank you. And
thanks for being with us.
And 100% of the money we raise at this event goes into our teen programs and materials.
In a moment, Broadway star Audra McDonald and more coming as well. Keep it right here.
I'm Joshua Johnson. Next time on 1A, it's the Friday News Roundup. Do doctors like the plan to repeal Obamacare? Depends on which one you ask.
We have had tremendous input from doctors themselves. Dr. Price himself, a doctor, is the one who crafted this.
Healthcare, hackers, and the hunt for wiretaps. Get up to speed after a busy week on the Friday News Roundup. Next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Wildlife photographer Marty Essen tells us about the cool creatures he encountered on a round-the-world expedition.
No matter how much research I did ahead of time, nature always had a surprise for me that I didn't expect, and that's kind of the fun part.
And we update the scene in Ireland.
The people who emigrated, the young people of Ireland who emigrated, who went off to Australia and New Zealand, that we're looking for them to come home now.
On the next Travel with Rick Steves.
Saturday mornings at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
Hello.
This week on Jazz Night in America, we're celebrating the legacy of Miss Betty Carter.
Thank you for coming.
Vocalist Sharonay Wade and friends pay tribute to the late singer.
It feels a lot more personal with Betty Carter. Really personal, like she's your auntie, sister, friend.
That's this week on Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, it's a dazzling showcase of the hard work and talents of this area's performing arts students. And it's also a way to demonstrate the payoff for educating the whole child, with not just the ABCs, math, science, and English, but the arts as well. The second annual Celebration of the Arts is coming up next week. We've got a preview with Jeffrey Smith, Director of Arts with the Duval County Public Schools. Hey, Jeff, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
And, you know, I just went to the Douglas Anderson Extravaganza Showcase. The talent of the children is incredible. This is another way to see the incredible results from arts education in our school system, right? Yeah.
It is. It's an amazing way to see the power and possibility of the arts and how it's transforming our schools and the lives of our students. And Extravaganza was phenomenal. I always enjoy attending that event. And we will be featuring actually a Douglas Anderson group reflections at this event, along with students from many, many schools. In fact, 45 different schools will be represented.
Wow. Of all ages, not just high
school,
right?
Of all ages. Elementary, middle, and high school students.
Now, this is something that you've done incredible work around. The first event was last year. This, you'll be building off that success, artwork and live performances. What all are people going to get to see?
Correct. Yes, we're going to start first with some elementary groups. We actually have about 15 different ensembles performing. We will be presenting a very special award to Dr. Vitti for Florida Music Education Association Superintendent of the Year, with Dr. Sands presenting that. We'll have 150 visual art pieces featured from different students in slideshows, two creative writing pieces in the program from Landmark Middle School and Reball High School. And we will also be presenting the first ever Any Given Child Reach Award that comes with a $2,500 award.
Nice.
For an outstanding educator who is inspiring students, engaging the community, and advancing the profession.
This is so exciting because in this era where school funding is always difficult, Duval County Public Schools has forged ahead with a really robust commitment to the arts. And the data demonstrates over and over again that it really pays off in terms of a child's academic success, right?
Correct. There have been many studies, including a cohort study that's been conducted every few years, that shows that literally hundreds of thousands of students who are graduating from our high schools in Florida are having higher test scores, increased academic achievement, and graduating on time and more frequently if they participate in more arts courses. So it is tremendous to see that both at the state level, the national level, and also locally. We have now four elementary schools with arts integration themes. We have another arts magnet school, Fort Caroline Middle School. And we are seeing across the district schools, administrators, teachers, parents, and faculty embracing the arts in their programs.
You can do that, too, if you come on out to the second annual Celebration of the Arts. It's next Thursday night at the Times Union Center. Show starts at 7. Go to DuvalSchools.org/arts and get your ticket. Jeff Smith, Director of Arts for DCPS. And you wanted to add one more thing?
I did want to add that is a free event, and if you don't get a ticket in advance, please just show up. It will be at 7 p.m., and we will also be collecting instruments and donations for our Instruments for Change campaign.
Thanks, Jeff. Well, speaking of the value of the arts, she's a Tony, Emmy, and Grammy winner and a Broadway legend. Performing arts powerhouse Audra McDonald takes the stage Sunday night with the Jacksonville Children's Chorus. I spoke with McDonald about her amazing career and how she's looking forward to performing with some of our most talented kids. Take a listen. Audra McDonald, a pleasure. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
And there's so much excitement that you'll be performing in Jacksonville along with the Jacksonville Children's Chorus. Incredible accolades around your career. And when you do a live performance like this and you incorporate another entity, what is that like for you? And what can we look forward to?
I love performing live. It's kind of, you know, where I got my start. And I love doing concerts because it's a chance for me to sort of break down the fourth wall that would normally exist in a theatrical production and really, really, truly, you know, be able to speak directly to the audience. Adding the other entity of the children's chorus, when they came to me with the idea, I was very excited by it, just for the simple reason that I'm a mom and I love children and I love listening to children's choirs and choruses. I usually cry whenever I hear a children's chorus, so the opportunity to sing with them will be a joyous one. So I'm hoping, and I don't see why it wouldn't be just a really joyous evening.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. And it's so exciting to have them on stage with you. What a thrill for them. And of course, you're equally at home on a Broadway or an opera stage as you are doing film and TV. You're being seen right now in the new live-action version, for example, of Beauty and the Beast. That must have been a fun project to work on as well.
Oh, it was incredible. And we filmed it over 2 years ago now. It takes a long time to put something like that together, especially with CGI technology that they use. But to be a part of such an incredible movie that, you know, will now be a part of the Disney canon is... There are no words about how honored I am to be a part of that. And I'm really proud of it. I saw it last week in London. I saw the premiere of it. And people are in for a treat. It's a real special film.
And after you finish this tour, what's next on your plate? You do so many things in the performance space. What else can we look forward to?
Well, I'm actually going to turn around and head right back to London do... A Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill. So from Disney to Billie Holiday, that's a big leap. But I'm doing that on the West End. It'll be my West End debut, so I'm very excited about that. And then there are lots of other sort of exciting concerts again all over the country next year, one will land me right back in New York, which I'm excited about as well. And then there's always a Broadway show in the future. So,
sure. Of course.
Right now, that's what I've got going on. So.
What a career, and it's such a delight to speak with you. There's a lot of excitement for your concert here in Jacksonville. Audra McDonald, such a pleasure, and thanks. Hope you enjoy your visit to Florida.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you. And finally, this hour, weather has delayed the start of Amelia Island's big auto event, the Concours d'Elegance. But things are still set to get in gear this weekend. We've got a preview right now. Our music director and resident gearhead, David Luckin, is at the Concours. He's on the phone. Hey, David.
Hey, Melissa. Gearhead, I like that. Hey, the tour happened as we were driving in. All those gorgeous cars were on tour. So the weather is holding off a bit. And there's so much to do here. You've got the list like I do. It starts today with the preview of all the Sotheby's auction cars. And Melissa, if you got $1 million or something here for you.
Hey, no sweat. I've got $1 million sitting in my back pocket.
There you go. Then I will meet you here on Saturday. For those of us who don't have $1 million, unlike Melissa, there's Cars and Coffee with 460 registered vehicles. That'll be a great show. And that's all everyone local and around the country who brings their cars down. And then there's, of course, there's panel discussions and seminars. And Sunday is the big day where we show off all the incredible art as cars. And Al Unger Sr. will be here, the Jaguar D-Type Streamliners, the cars of Marmon, Brumos Racing, Camaro. The very first Camaro will be here. And then here's one I like, the 1958 507 BMW that Elvis took delivery of in Germany when he was in the service. That car will be here, plus cars that are movie stars.
Oh.
So you name it, it's here. All the cars, like
including,
Rain Man, that beautiful Buick.
Yeah, including Elvis's, one of Elvis's cars? Can you talk
about his 507 BMW that he took delivery of in Germany. It's a gorgeous, it's just one of the, it's like the, you know, like the Corvette split window 63 coupe. It's just one of those designs that will go down in history as one of the most beautiful designs. And of course, he had the money in 58, so he bought one. And BMW has shipped it over here for this show.
Wow. Now, what do you love the most?
For everybody.
You love this event, David. What is it that you think draws people from all over the world?
I think it, well, let me just tell you, there's over 500 people applied for credentials for media, and 300 were approved. So this is, what draws people is, after Pebble Beach, this is probably the greatest Concours in America or the world. This is just, you just look at the people and the cars, and it's really cars as art. These aren't just your Ford, Chevy, and Plymouth. These are incredible, historic vehicles from the brass age to today. There's driving events where you can drive the new Jaguars. It's something for everyone who loves cars or loves art.
And are you planning to be up there this weekend too?
I'll be here every day, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. This is the only work I'm going to do. I'm just going to enjoy the show. Yeah, because it's just, and there's always surprises. They will unveil cars that no one has seen before that they got at the last minute. So there's always something here that they didn't even know they were going to get till literally today, and the car will be here tomorrow. So anyone who loves cards or loves art should come out. It all goes to a good cause, too, like the TPC. You know, the money is raised for hospice and other charities. So,
and hopefully nice weather. Weekend. Yeah, nice weather all weekend for it. It's the Amelia Island Concours d'Elegance happening now. You can hang out with David if you head up there, check out some incredible cars, and really have a fabulous time. David, enjoy.
Thank you very much. Thanks for letting me talk about it.
Oh, sure. And that's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Download our WJCT app and listen anytime. And next, the Friday News Roundup on 1A. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.